moral victories, we bring in college football ESPN reporter David Hill. We talk some Alabama. We talk some LSU. We talk some overall college football. And the thing that me and Dave enjoy most in this world, and that's gambling on sports. We hit on a whole host of other topics, and now we have a new producer. It's no longer Mikey P, it's Tim. Tim, I need some Denny.
Sports. The thrill of victory.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
The agony of defeat.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Every loss teaches a lesson that's important for a young athlete's development.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in the progress that we've made.
But it's important to remember that sports is about having fun, not winning.
You're here for one goddamn specific reason.
What's that, Earl?
Jackass!
Ah, you're full of shit. Fuck you.
This is Moral Victories with Jared Shanker.
You really think I give a flying what the people on the radio call say?
Yeah. I was really interested in hearing your response to if you could hear my deep, soothing voice.
Yeah, I said you sounded like a young Al Green.
I get that a lot. Actually, I get Bruno Mars a lot.
Well, that's, I mean, it goes without saying.
Yeah, and then I actually try singing, and they're like, okay, you're not Bruno. You can put your clothes back on.
You can put your clothes back on, I feel like, is a phrase you've heard a lot about.
Pretty much all of high school. And right on cue, now joined by David, David Hill, reporter for ESPN covering college football and maybe college basketball now, and probably whatever he feels like. I feel like David has enough clout where he can just do whatever he wants at ESPN, and he's calling in from Blacksburg, Virginia, home of Virginia Tech. Which how are things down in Virginia Tech right now, Dave?
I think they're good. I had a nice chat with Justin Fuente today. He asked me why I was such a jerk to people on Twitter, so I think things are going well.
I've been wondering that same question myself for years.
He guessed correctly that it was for my own entertainment, so, you know.
He's a smart guy. I'm not convinced.
Very perceptive.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that every football person is as smart as we'd like him out to be. I think Justin definitely is one of the smarter coaches out here. But I know we were trading text messages earlier, and I think it's probably it speaks a lot to just how far Monday Night Football has dropped that we were both kind of not really paying attention to the game yesterday. But I was surprised when I heard Brian Schottenheimer is, again, an offensive coordinator for one of the 32 NFL teams after he had done so well with the Jets, done so well with Georgia, and I'm not even sure where else he failed. But are you with me on that at all? Or maybe, like, obviously they're smarter than us, but, like, maybe football people aren't really, like, as smart? Because I've seen the coaches poll, and I know they're not really voting anyway, but I'm not always buying that, like, they're always as smart as they think they are.
Yeah, I think that's most definitely the case. I mean, smart. Look, smarts is always sort of matter of perception to some extent. So, like, when years ago, I lived in Kentucky for a little while. I lived in this duplex where I was on the top floor, and there was a different apartment on the bottom floor. And the people that lived there when I first moved in were fine, but then this other dude and his girlfriend moved in, and they were just like straight, like Hollywood central casting redneck Kentucky. I mean, bad. So, anyway, some stuff went down. I don't want to get into a long story, but like me and this dude that was living there had some beef. And, so anyway, this dude who was dumb as a rock by any metric that a normal human being would use, just to piss me off, rewired the electrical so the light switch outside of the upstairs apartment wouldn't turn on the hallway light, but the downstairs one still would. And I was like, that is such a genius burn. Like, I wouldn't have been able to figure out how to do that. And this guy, who can barely probably spell his own name, knew how to rewire the electrical system and thought, like, man, this is really going to piss him off. And, like, since then, I've always had this appreciation for the fact that, like, people who I typically don't think are that smart may actually be a lot smarter than I am in some respects. So I think coaches fill that role in a lot of cases, that they're smarter at certain things than I am. I think if we made a list of 100 things, I'd probably be smarter than them at more of those things, but there are certain things that they are significantly better than I am at. Brian Schottenheimer is probably marginally better than me at calling plays, I'm guessing. I won't argue with that.
I'd say marginal at best. It's kind of like Michael Bolton, not the singer, but the tech savant, when they're about to get caught in Office Space, and he's wondering how these dumbass criminals are so good at crime, and they can't figure it out, and they're going to go to the a very special kind of federal prison, if you recall the movie that well.
It's amazing how much Office Space is fitting for life over and over and over again. Like, that movie really captures the reality of life on so many levels.
And let's do a real smooth transition, because we're just going to edit all that stuff out. So they'll hear us talking from Virginia Tech straight into Florida State. Don't worry, that's all going to be edited out. Florida State, the team that lost to Virginia Tech in the season opener, kind of changing expectations for both teams a little bit. Florida State's a school we, for those who don't really know David and mine's background, I covered Florida State for 3 years. Dave preceded me covering Florida State for 3 years as well, both consistently drawing the ire of FSU Twitter over that six-year period. Me, probably more so than Dave, but you're probably closer to the situation now. What is going on at Florida State? Because it's reached the point where Mia Khalifa, which I don't know if she's former adult film actress or still current, but she's setting up...
I think it's like the Marines. I think you're never retired. You're never former. You're just not currently performing.
That's the best way to put it. Currently on active reserve, reserve duty, Mia Khalifa has a GoFundMe.
Then we're going to have to edit so much of this.
Oh, yeah. This is never making it to air. So she has a GoFundMe for Willie Taggart, T-A-G-G-E-R-T, to have his $21 million contract bought out. They've raised $57 at this point, so they should be right on pace to buy him out as soon as his contract expires in about 2025. But I mean, all joking aside, things are bad there, and I don't want to. I probably should not be the one talking about Florida State, because their fans already. I think it's a section of the fan base generally doesn't appreciate my opinions on them, but. Somebody who still actively covers the ACC as close as you do, what is going on, and are they doomed at least through the end of 2018?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, part of this is sort of the, in my impression, a little bit of the misnomer of recruiting rankings. The way that recruiting rankings are done is it's sort of this, add up all the stars, divide it by the number of guys that you recruited. What's the average? That's your recruiting ranking. And that has looked good for Florida State for the last few years. They've gotten a lot of players, but those players are not very evenly dispersed throughout the roster. And so what you've seen is some position groups where there is a clear lack of talent, development, depth, numbers, whatever bad, that's what's going on. So you look at the linebacking core, and you can attest to this, it's been shaky to bad for a while now. The wide receiving core, they've recruited highly touted wide receivers that really have not developed into legitimate game breakers, and so they don't have this guy who's really, you know, changing the dynamic down the field offensively. And then worst of all, the offensive line is a train wreck. I mean, just horrific. And you wouldn't expect that guys, like, you would think that the worst offensive lineman recruited by Florida State should still be, at worst, a passable offensive lineman, a guy who's not just getting bull rushed on every play. But that's what's happening.
Whose quarterback doesn't actively show just a complete hatred for him in the middle of a game as what happened. He should at least not dip to that level. I get what you're saying.
Right, yes. If DeAndre Francois' mom hasn't had to come down from the stands and, like, do, like, an Adrian and Rocky and, like, beg to protect her son, that's kind of where things are at right now. It is a train wreck. And so, you know, it's hard to sort of tell where all of the problems are when your offensive line is this bad, because, does the offense look slow and out of whack and utterly confused because they're actually utterly confused, or because a play doesn't even have 2 or 3 seconds to develop before everything starts to break down? I think there's probably a little bit of both going on there. And so the former is not Willie Taggart's fault. It is the problem that he inherited. The latter, however, is, and to me this has been the really frustrating part, is you know, it's what he calls lethal simplicity. This offense has certainly been maybe simple, but not lethal. You think, if it's that simple, how are they screwing it up this badly? I mean, there are times in each of these games that they've played so far that you look at them and you say, did y'all just meet, like, when you got on the bus to come to the game, or have you practiced together before? This is as bad as I have seen a team play. I mean, even, like, you think back to those Wake Forest teams when Dave Clawson first got there, and that was a terrible offensive line, but they at least were kind of, like, running something that resembled an offense, an overmatched one, but an offense. Like, this just looks like 11 guys ran out on the field and said, what do you want to do?
Yeah, I think the Dave Clawson Wake Forest comparison's a really good one, because you could see that there was progress being made, and now, like, it wouldn't even shock. It's been, what, 5 years since he first got there, 5-6 years since he first got there, which is a lot of time. But now they're at a point where they're, I think last I checked, they're a 7.5-point underdog hosting Notre Dame, and not that many people who even sort of follow the sport would be that shocked if they pulled off the upset. Right now, like, you look at Florida State, and it doesn't seem like there's any type of positive trajectory. And I know people have shown Taggart's record at USF and Western Kentucky is, I think, both being 2-10 his first 2 years there. And certainly they could have that similar type of jump. But it's just kind of hard to see where exactly things are going right now when you kind of came in as this offensive guru who's going to reshape what a lot of people thought was a stagnant offense under Jimbo. And you've scored, what, I think 10 points against FBS competition at that point, or at this point, and even against your FCS foe, you still were terrible for most of the game. And, like, I want to see Taggart succeed. I hate saying I think somebody seems like a nice guy or seems like a genuine person, because that stuff changes so quickly, and we don't even know a tenth, like 10% of these people. But he does seem like a decent guy, and not to get too political or whatnot, but I think there are some bigger things at play here, sort of like when Charlie Strong was at Texas and he kind of understood the pressure on him there. But Florida State had a black athletic director, Leonard Hamilton being their lead basketball coach, and Willie Taggart being their lead football coach. I do want to see them succeed there. It's just really hard to see where the progress is being made at this point, but I'm not trying to overreact. Without getting too hot takey, I'll do hot takes on everybody but Florida State. I don't have the goodwill with that fan base for they're going to be able to pick up on any jokes.
No, but we'll park a police car in front of your house for a few days. It'll be fine. Say what you need. you're right though. I mean, look, I don't think that there's a point in overreacting, but there's a couple of definitive truths I think here. And number one is there's no free agents to sign, no trades you can make. An offensive line is a position where you don't just get better overnight. You need to get bigger and faster and stronger, and that takes time. So I don't know that this is a solvable situation in 2018. It may not even be a solvable situation in 2019. And in previous stops, you mentioned Western Kentucky and USF. That was fine for Willie Taggart. He could afford to have two win seasons if you're building something.
Sure.
There was a patience and an understanding there because there wasn't expectations. That's not the case at Florida State. The worst years at Florida State, like last year or during the really doldrums of the Bowden era, are still bowl seasons. And not there's never a season where you're allowed to be struggling to get past Samford at home. It's just, you know, I don't think that Willie Taggart's an idiot. I don't think that his methodology can't work. I just wonder if there is the patience at a place like Florida State to allow it to work the way that it has in other places.
And I think the new AD, whenever that's announced, I have no idea. I hardly fact-checked anything at this point now that I'm no longer responsible for putting out accurate information. That's on you guys to who's at the Jack whatever CEO Twitter Jack or whatever his name is that said it's on you. It's not Twitter's job to enforce facts. It's on the media's job. So you can add that to your job responsibilities. You're responsible for now fact checking the Moral Victories podcast.
I got nothing else going on anyway, so that's fine.
Perfect.
I'll run through it. I'll put out a PolitiFact rundown of how stupid everything that you said was afterwards.
Perfect. I do appreciate that. I want to ask you about LSU. I saw you taking a little bit of heat on Twitter, I think, from some LSU fans because you don't buy that they're that good at this point. Which I could see. Like, I mean, you look at they weren't particularly great against Miami. They weren't particularly great against Auburn. I mean, Auburn is just, that is befuddling how one program can just continuously like underachieve when you just kind of look back at and just overachieve and then just like 5 years of underachieve. I think it's like been forever since they've won eight games back in back-to-back years, which is like, and it's because they lose games like that where they had no business losing. But to get back to LSU, I feel like I don't know how much they won that game versus Auburn just didn't run away with it. And I think partially I don't get all the love for Jarrett Stidham. But LSU, I think clearly at some point, like they're not a team that's going to probably make it to the playoff and then win it. They're just too bad on offense. And it's not like their defense is 85 Bears worthy. But what's your take on LSU? Because I feel like I love LSU because I've always really liked them and I like Coach O, but I know that it's all going to come crashing down because they still have, even though Florida stinks, they still got to play Florida. They got to play Georgia. Alabama is probably going to just beat the hell out of them. But give me your take on why you are taking this crusade against Coach O.
No, I love Coach O too, first of all. I was talking to my buddy Tommy Tomlinson, has a longtime
okay, Mike Wilbon.
Hey, I'm dropping names here, but he's got a book coming out in February, and I was talking to him about if there was going to be an audio book and who would read it, and he said he wanted to get Coach O to read it, and I was like, that's the most brilliant idea I've ever heard. Anyway, I wouldn't even care. He could have read the phone book, and I would listen to that. They don't make phone books anymore, I don't think. But still, that's, you know, you know what I'm getting at.
Alan Avery, 984-682. Arthur Adams. Sorry. But yeah, so LSU stinks because why?
But it's just, their offense is not good. Now, here's the thing. Joe Burrow made some money throws in that final drive against Auburn. Like, that's legit. I'm not trying to take that away. But by and large, what LSU has been able to do is play extraordinarily conservatively and play very low-risk football, so they're not turning the ball over, and they're essentially saying, hey, other teams, come out and beat us. And they've got a good enough defense that that's not an easy thing to do, and so they have somehow won these two games as other teams have imploded around them. I just think that at some point, that's not sustainable, that there are teams who are going to come out and beat you, or you're going to get to a point where it's not about one drive. You've got to have Joe Burrow make, you know, a dozen throws in the second half of a game that are must-make throws. And he's just, I don't know that he's capable of doing it. Or at least there's not evidence at this point that suggests that he is. So, you know, my problem really wouldn't be with LSU at all, except for the fact that because they've won these two games, nationally people want to talk about, oh, LSU's back. Oh, LSU deserves to be talked about as the number one team in the country. Oh, isn't LSU good? And it's the fact of the matter is, just because you've won games, at the end of the day, yes, winning is the most important thing. But it's sort of like saying, you know, my check engine light's been on for 6 months, and I haven't had an oil change in 3 years, and I'm out of gas, but my car got me here, so I assume I could just keep driving it like this for as long as possible. Like, at some point, the input isn't there. You're not going to get that output anymore. And so it annoys me when people only look at the output and not the input, and that is sort of what's going on with LSU. It is nothing personal against LSU. It is something more personal about the way LSU gets talked about now.
The Joe Burrow stuff is fascinating to me. I just feel like transfers in general, it's like anybody that's in the recruiting class, immediately awesome. But then, like, transfers are like the Dave Brandon of college football, where, like, they just kind of somehow, like, fall upwards. Like, it doesn't matter how either okay, bad, good you were at your last stop. When you transfer in, you're automatically considered, like, the best player on the team. Like, when Joe Burrow would transfer to LSU, I saw people saying how their offense is going to be different because they just got the third-string quarterback from Ohio State. And it's the same thing. Well, I don't want to say the same thing with Jarrett Stidham at Auburn. He had a solid freshman year at Baylor, but nothing he did at Baylor, like, immediately translates to him being the type of, like, Heisman candidate that he was hyped up to be. He was not great. Like, he had his moments last year, but he wasn't great in the Washington game. He had his moments very early on there. Wasn't great in this game, and they still have to go through the SEC West gauntlet, where I took Auburn under 9 wins this year, and I feel really good about it, especially when they have Georgia and Alabama left. But I'm not thinking push. I'm thinking the under is looking really good, because I had chalked up the LSU game as a win, and to have that one early on, I'm feeling great on my Auburn one. But I just don't get the whole transfer thing, and I see we're LSU. There's really no reason to believe in Joe Burrow, and I mean, if they somehow make it to Alabama undefeated, which I don't see because I think Georgia's going to run right through them, I think Alabama's just going to destroy them. And are you ready for the real hot takery question? This is on like the Mount Rushmore of hot take questions. Alabama, now that they have a quarterback, bad for college football? Yes or no? Well, just yes, and explain why yes.
I think that it is bad for college football that there are so...
That's going to be the audio clip that gets promoted out, by the way.
I think it's pretty good for college football in general. I think sports are better when you have a genuinely great team. Like, I think you either root for or against somebody, you know? Like, and if your team's not... If your team's bad, you don't have that team to root for. So at least have somebody to root against, you know? I think it's bad when there is never a challenger. I think that is problematic. But I do think there are challengers. I think Oklahoma is a potential challenger. I think Clemson's a definite challenger. I think Georgia's a definite challenger. I think Ohio State could be in that mix to challenge. I would like to see college football be in a position where there were more than 5 or 6 teams every year that had a real chance. But I don't mind that Alabama is sort of the benchmark for everybody. And again, like, it's almost astonishing that we're a decade into this Nick Saban run, and we're talking about the first time they've had a legitimately great quarterback. Like, that's crazy in its own right. But, I mean, to your point, there's a different level to Alabama this year, and we'll see how it plays out over the whole season. But you only have to watch about a series or two with Tua to see this isn't the Alabama teams that won 4 national championships in the last 7 years. This is even better than that.
Tua is just insanely good. Watching him, does his motion look funky to you? Like, I see him throw, and I'm just like, that's going to be overthrown. That's going to be incomplete. And then it literally cannot be more perfectly in stride every single time, whether it was the national championship throw. I think he had one of those in the Louisville game, and then maybe it was the first or second touchdown against Ole Miss on Saturday. It's like, oh, that's not a great throw. And then literally the guy does not even break a single stride. But when he throws it, you're like, that looks funky to me? Or is this just me?
Yeah, oh, 100%. It's this weird sort of, like, slingshot motion. It reminds me of, like, a guy who has just this, like, ridiculous golf swing, and it looks like it's going to have this horrible slice to it on every shot, and then he's just dropping it in the fairway. Like, it's a weird-looking delivery. It is, I mean, he's got a rocket for an arm, but it does, like, coming out of his hand, you're like, oh, man, that receiver's really going to have to chase that down, and then you know, the camera cuts to the other angle, and you're like, oh, that was a perfectly thrown ball.
Yeah, that's exactly what I see. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a terrible pass. The screen isn't big enough. I need the all 22. That's what I need. Really, really get in, exactly. Break this film down, and then see. I want to see what Tua is seeing. But let's I kind of gave the intro to the listeners before you hopped on. Me and you, our stream of text messages at this point is almost strictly gambling. And I don't know, maybe there's a Simpsons quote or GIF somewhere in between, but almost strictly gambling. We're going to get into some games, but I'm curious, now that you are a father, not just a fur father, but like a real one, has fatherhood changed your gambling at all? Like, man, I just, like, college is going to be how expensive? So, like, I need to I need to win a ton more, or I need to try to lose a lot less. Like, it's that one, like, I don't know if you remember, this might be also kind of like that Real World Vegas. There was that Jason Lee movie. He has, like, a niece, and he's trying to, I'm going to Google it right now. He has a niece, and he's trying to, like, steal, like, he, like, wants to rob a bank because he's trying to pay for her college. Stealing Harvard is what it's called.
Yeah.
You remember this vaguely? He has to try to get.
I do vaguely remember.
Yeah,
this.
He wants to send his daughter or his niece to college, and I guess they're gonna steal Harvard in some regard. It stars Tom Green.
Tom Green was in it.
Yeah, Tom Green is in it. One of the doctors from Scrubs, which I love, is in it. Dennis Farina, Dr. Doback from Step Brothers. That's a solid cast, actually.
I might have to watch this. I don't know how I missed this the first time around.
That's a 5.1 on IMDb. But anyway.
Better than average?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, slightly above average. It's a fine movie. It's fine. but yeah, so gambling. Are you more cognizant now of what you win and or lose, knowing that your family's future is on the line?
I would love to say that I am a mature enough human being that I have sat down and considered this, but that would be a lie. I think you can't ever gamble scared. You know, if you're worried about, if you have
there
to
we
win
go.
That, then that's you're terrible to be willing to lose. If you can't really lose a bet, you shouldn't be betting anyway.
What do you think of, and you let me know if you have any good ones, what do you think of these, of introducing these to prop bets? I'd like to see these on DraftKings next time I log on. Prop bet, over, under, or not over, whether there's going to be a turnover chain-like celebration involving a live animal this year. What do you think? Would you bet yes or no? Live animal being incorporated into a turnover chain-ish celebration?
I think that there, for liability reasons, my guess is there won't be. But I would love to see, like, the LSU Tiger just come out and maul a guy. You know, like, that would be... You remember the bloopers scene in The Naked Gun where, like, the guy's playing outfield and goes to catch
the lion
ball,
gets him.
Gets mauled by a lion? Yeah, that's what I...
And you just get that... Yeah. I would like to see that, or you just have Ralphie out there, or who's like the most unintimidating live animal? And is it the eagle? Is it Alabama? Not Alabama.
Eagle,
is it Auburn's eagle?
Like eagle could like mess you up. Eagle has those talons.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Does anybody have like a
ram
fish?
At North Carolina? Do they bring out a ram at North Carolina ever?
I'd rather have the eagle than the. I'd rather fight the eagle than the ram. The ram, I just like that's almost going in like with a bull.
Yeah, but they're skinnier than a bull. I feel like you could really wrap up get your arm around a chokehold a ram.
What's a Chanticleer? Isn't that like a chicken? You think? They have like
that's a fighting chicken.
Yeah. Who wins between a Chanticleer and a Gamecock? I guess the Gamecocks. Gamecocks won by like 50.
The Blue Hens. It's amazing how many fighting chicken nicknames there are.
Yeah, that's actually. now that we are really going through it all, there are a lot of fighting roosters out there.
Yeah. Well. You know who I would actually not want to mess with is the Western Kentucky Blob, the big red guy.
Oh
I
yeah.
Mess with him.
Who wins? Whoa!
I don't know
whoa! In there. You sure you want your Syracuse faithful to hear that? Because Otto is pretty much the same thing, just, you know, one color down on the spectrum.
Otto is more form-fitting. He has an actual shape to him. He is an orange. Whereas the Western Kentucky Hilltopper, is he a hill? I'm not really sure what he is.
He's a topper.
He's like a Muppet.
No, he's a topper.
He's the top of a hill.
Yeah. He has the hill, and then he's also a top of it.
He's like the Seinfeld the Mushroom Tops episode. I don't know what happened to the rest of the hill. There's like another mascot that's just like the rest of the hill, but they don't use him. They just had the top.
He didn't make it out of tryouts that year.
When this finally airs, this is going to be like a 4-minute podcast.
Oh yeah, everything is getting edited out. The only thing people are going to care about are picks. So let's get to them. I don't know what you're specifically looking at, but let's hit on a couple games that people actually care about. I like betting games that are awful because I think one that's where a lot of the money you can win is. And there's only what, 3 or 4 actually good games a week in college, and in the NFL it's even lower than that. There's maybe one. You could hope for one. So to bet on the shitty ones, it opens up. You know, it makes some of the other ones more exciting, but. FAU is getting 13 points against UCF. I haven't looked deep into it yet. I kind of like FAU there. I feel like they've gotten some things straightened out since the Oklahoma one. And I feel like maybe they even purposely quit against Oklahoma, thinking we're going to lose by a ton anyway. There's no point in going up against guys who are 5 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier. Let's just, you know, get out of here with the L. But I feel like 13 points against a UCF team, which still... You know, who knows? What are you thinking there?
Yeah, I mean, look, UCF has played nobody so far this year. Mackenzie Milton looked horrific in his last game. I don't know what happened there. But, yeah, I feel like, you know, there was this hype surrounding Kiffin and FAU, and then they go get their doors blown off by Oklahoma, which everyone should have seen coming to begin with, and then everybody's like, oh, FAU is not that good anymore. So, 13 seems like a really high number to me. You know, if you had said, like, all right, UCF by a touchdown, I might be a little more on the fence. I really like FAU for this game.
Yeah, I thought maybe, like, 10 would have been a better number. If it's 10, I'm probably staying away because I can, you know, maybe something happens late there. But I feel like 2 touchdowns, that's some good value there. What about, so I believe, you can fact check it, I believe Oregon opened as a favorite against Stanford. And that line has completely flipped to Stanford. Last I saw was a 2-point favorite. I'm going to stay away from it, but you have a if I had to go with it, I think Oregon is at home. I'm still not buying the Cardinal that much. Maybe I would take Oregon, but what would you have there?
Yeah, I'm leaning Oregon. I was very down on Stanford to start the season. They've not really looked great in any of their games, but... they've won fairly convincingly. And Bryce Love, I don't really know what's going on with him. You know, I don't buy Oregon's defense as sort of the problem here. Like, I think Oregon's decent, but I'm not really sold on their defense. And KJ Costello has been better than I thought he was going to be.
He has been.
And so I lean Oregon just because I'm sticking by my guns on being a Stanford hater, but I really have no reason to think that anymore other than I said it.
Yeah, I have the under on Stanford for the year.
I'm not giving up on it yet.
I have the under on Stanford for the year, so it's been a little frustrating that they haven't. I thought maybe there's a good chance they drop either San Diego State or USC. So to see them winning, I don't like that at all. But Oregon, it's not that they've looked that great either. I said I don't really have a great feel on this one. I don't really have a great feel on Texas versus TCU either. TCU's coming off a huge they potentially in a letdown spot, although I feel like they probably leave that game feeling somewhat good about themselves, that they're able to test Ohio State for probably close to like 40 minutes. Texas is obviously feeling themselves, as Texas is wont to do after somewhat meaningful wins in the grand scheme of things, because USC is not good at all, and I don't think that win really says much of anything on Texas. And that I'm fine with Texas. I like Tom Herman. I still think he's going to get that thing turned around. But I do, they're low hanging fruit as far as making fun of, and I'm going to take that every single time. But it's a weird game where one's on such an emotional high and one's like, you could maybe say, is in a potential letdown spot on the other end. I think TCU is a 3-point favorite. Are you going to get in? Are you going to get in on that one? You going to dip your toes into?
I kind of like TCU on this one, just because. I mean, you kind of hear some of the comments from Ohio State after the game, and I think Ohio State came away saying this was a much more athletic, talented team than we might have thought coming in. I think TCU is pretty legit, and I'm not sold on Texas. And, like, normally I might say maybe there is sort of this emotional hangover after the Ohio State game, but this is still Texas. Like, this is still little brother taking a swing up at big brother.
That's true.
I don't think you do that lightly.
You can't just steal our athletic director and not expect repercussions.
Right.
You don't take our mid-50s white athletic director and think you're just going to go into your house and let that happen? No. So
did we give up when the Germans built bomb Pearl Harbor? Hell no.
Exactly. So actually, I'm with you. I do think if I'm taking a side, I do like TCU. I just think they're the better team. And Sam and Englinger, I wouldn't trust him at all. I don't trust him at all against that TCU defense. A couple games that I am looking at, I haven't put in anything yet, except for, in hindsight, a terrible decision. I wasn't sure how good Tua was going to look. Preseason, I took Texas A&M plus 22. And at minus 120 juice. So I'm really looking terrible in this spot right now. They're now a 27-point underdog, which I still feel like isn't terrible. But do you have any... Are you? Would you go Texas A&M, try to make me feel better about my terrible pick, or would you just be loading up on Bama at this point?
So I took Ole Miss last week kind of thinking, ooh, like, well, you know, they're at home. They got an offense that can put up some points. Maybe this is a game.
Technically, you weren't wrong. They did. The offense put up points.
that is
expert analysis from David Hale.
Immediately, yeah. So, you know, I just think this is a different Bama team. To me, this is a little bit of a stay away game because to me, it's very hard to lay 4 touchdowns to anyone at this level, but. I mean, Alabama is just, I think they're ungodly good. So if you told me Alabama was going to win by 40, it wouldn't surprise me in the least. So I really can't go out on a limb and bet A&M, but I would be very reluctant to lay 4 touchdowns against Jimbo Fisher and what I think is probably a better than we thought A&M team.
I'm praying that Saban just takes it easy on Fisher because they're friends. That's literally all I have in my corner at this point.
Well, Saban has been known over the years to take it easy on people and prioritize friendship and relationships over winning football games.
Yeah, I am trying to pull at the heartstrings of Nick Saban, and I don't know if that's going to be successful. What do you think's the biggest? What do you think the biggest SEC spread Bama's going to have this year? I'm going to bring up their schedule real quick. Let's see what type of trash.
Well, they're going to play Arkansas.
It's got to be Arkansas. Like,
35 to Arkansas, yeah.
I just don't know who they have on the east side. They're at Tennessee, and they're at Arkansas. So they're at Arkansas. They're at home against Missouri. Oh, my God, Missouri's going to let up 80.
Yes.
So they got Missouri and Tennessee in the east.
In every one of those games. Like that. They're going to go through the SEC being a 30-point favorite in virtually every game that they play.
Yeah, I think they're hitting 30 on Arkansas. I think that's like 33, 34 territory.
Yeah. At Tennessee, I could see being, you know, sort of similar to this, 27-28. And then Missouri probably in that same area, maybe 24-25.
Dear God. They are just going to run through everybody. But I really think the only team that stands a chance with them, at least before the playoff, is Georgia. And, I mean, I was really high on them before. I only put money preseason on a national championship on Washington with the idea that they just get to the playoff and then I can, I can kind of go from there. It was plus something insane. It was a free bet, free money. So I was like, might as well just go for the long shot at that point. There was no point putting the free bet on Alabama or anything like that. But I do like I said, I'm already on Texas A&M, and I do like Georgia given 14.5 on the road this week. You know me, I'm almost a strictly underdog and unders guy. I love the punting game, but Missouri's defense is terrible. I think I don't see this being a letdown spot for Georgia. I think the defense is going to come to play. If they keep Missouri under 20, which I think they can do, or 21, 24, I'm not too concerned about it.
Missouri's O-line can pass protect. That's the one thing I will say, is I think Missouri's O-line is good enough to sort of negate some of that pass
pressure. Yeah, Locke had a ton of time against Purdue.
But, yeah, I mean, their defense is so bad. And, like, the thing of it is, Georgia just can run the ball up and down the field against them and keep Drew Locke off the field. So, yeah, I mean, that seems like a reasonable. I got burned by Ohio State betting a double-digit road favorite last week.
Oh, God,
week.
That hurt.
I shouldn't do that again. But I say that every week, and then I end up doing it, so.
Another game I'm looking at is, I know Florida stinks, that defense isn't good anymore, but I think Tennessee is just god awful. I don't think they're really that much better than they were a year ago, which, I mean, that's nothing on Jeremy Pruitt. That whole situation this offseason was a mess. You're not really able to build a recruiting class there. The last few years with Butch have been a mess. I mean, Butch was somebody that I felt like also was unfairly targeted. He just generally was not a great coach either, though. So I don't know if I'm going to take it, but I'm also looking at Florida giving 4.5 points on the road. Texas Tech getting 13 at Oklahoma State, I don't hate. And I sort of like San Diego State giving 10. But what about you, Dave? What are you looking at this weekend?
Speaking of road favorites, I like Pitt over North Carolina. I think Pitt's pretty decent. That final score against Penn State was a little bit deceiving, in my opinion. They played it close for.
You're right. Penn State should have beat them by even more, says Penn State.
Yes.
Penn State 2011.
Well, look,
you're right. You're right. You're right.
Team, but,
I agree.
UNC is just terrible, in my opinion. So 3.5 in Chapel Hill. I don't view Chapel Hill as a great home field advantage anyway. I like Pitt a lot in that game. I think Maryland rebounds against Minnesota this week. They're given 3. I kind of like that. Oregon State plus 6.5 against Arizona is an interesting one for me because we like betting terrible teams. Oregon State is a terrible.
Well, yeah, team. You literally can't do worse among the Power Five.
Yeah, but I mean Arizona's not good either, so it wouldn't necessarily surprise me if that's sort of in the. I mean they're playing at home. Can they keep it within a touchdown? Kind of like Oregon State. And then the one game that we absolutely have to talk about, because I think it's the most important, biggest, best game of the week, New Mexico State giving 3.5 at UTEP.
I saw that. I was like, New Mexico State might be the second worst team in FBS, but they're not bad enough to probably be more than a touchdown underdog to an FCS school outside of like James Madison or whatever. UTEP was more than a touchdown underdog to Northern Arizona in the opener, and I think they got waxed. So I was also looking at that. Like, it's just what's the gap between UTEP and New Mexico State? That's the real question. But I'm glad, it makes me so happy that you said that game, because I saw that too, and I was like, I think I have to.
I'm doing it just for fun. It's funny because, so I bet New Mexico State in the opener against Wyoming, thinking like, oh, they can keep this close. and they are terrible. They are awful. And I thought, well, this is good to learn in week one. I'm going to stay in Mexico State the rest of the season. And that has been profitable the last 2 weeks.
It has been.
Here we have arrived upon a game that I think I have to go with New Mexico State again, which is impressive in its own right. And speaking of terrible teams, the other spread that I wanted to point out, because it's just beautiful, is Big Ten member Rutgers is a 5-point home dog to Buffalo.
Yeah, that number dropped, though, from a New Jersey native. It was 6.5, and now it's down to 5. A lot of money pouring in on Sunge.
They've got that going for them, which is nice.
Oh, God, I took Rutgers last week, and I've now bet Kansas and Rutgers in back-to-back weeks, and I couldn't be happier with myself. I'm not happy with the results, but I will do it.
Kansas,
I will do it again.
Kansas has a chance to get to 3-1 this week against Baylor.
Well,
the world might end if that happens, but it's possible.
When's the last time they've had a winning streak? I saw like 2008 was the last time they won back, or like 2010 was the last time they won back-to-back games. Is that?
Yeah, against an FBS foe. I think it was 2010 or it might have been 2008 actually. So we're like, I think I looked it up. The last time they won back-to-back games against an FBS opponent was the Saturday before and the Saturday after Obama got elected.
I assume we're talking first term.
First term, Obama.
Oh, my God.
Back when the nation had hope and Kansas had hope.
And it's so crazy that Kansas used to be Big 12 good. Like, you know, this was before the Big 12 was that bad. Kansas was like a legitimately solid program. Even when they weren't their Orange Bowl year, Kansas, like they weren't how we've come to know Kansas for the last 10 years.
Is that the single most like outlier season in modern college football history? The Orange Bowl year for them, or is it the Orange Bowl year for Wake Forest? See,
I was gonna say
Wake Forest. Like that is probably the one that most people would think of. But the ACC was so bad then. Like the Big 12 actually had like Missouri was really good that year too. Kansas State was decent.
What about UConn in the Fiesta Bowl?
Ooh, that's a good one. But that's a good one too.
Yeah,
that's a good one too.
Because I mean, they've like Wake Forest has kind of come back, and maybe Kansas still had like a solid year after that with Mangino. Because I know he didn't get fired right away. But like that was Edsel's last year at UConn for the first time, and I think they just completely fell off a cliff after that, didn't they? Because I think they went right to Diaco, and they were just like. Oh, like the worst team ever. So if I had to say,
well, as a Syracuse alum who lived through the Greg Roth, the thing about those Northeastern schools is you make one train wreck higher, and it is the end of your program for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Greg Robinson one was just brutal. Oh God, I forgot about the Greg Robinson. I kind of just went. I was just thinking Pasqualoni, who in hindsight, you know. Not like definitely not terrible.
They were 6-6 that year. They got rid of him, and everybody said, "Oh, this is woeful for Syracuse." And little did they know, 6-6, dream of getting back to that.
Same way Illinois, with the Zucker man.
That's right. Well, they beat Notre Dame. Greg Robinson's only claim to fame at Syracuse. They beat Notre Dame one year.
Is that when they had Ty?
I think so.
Yeah, I assume it had to be Ty or I guess those years would match up. And then last thing, Dave, then we're going to wrap up here. Just real quick for the ones who are listening, I don't know why, but they would take some of one, I don't know why they'd be listening. Two, I don't know why they would listen to our gambling advice. What are some of the things you look for when you're trying to pick a side? For me, I used to get really in depth with the numbers, and I know you're a big research, big numbers guy. I felt like it was just becoming too much, and it was starting to bog me down. I feel like I have a little bit better by looking at the numbers, and then also kind of bringing in a bit of a feel, looking at situations, who's coming off big games, who's got a big game coming up, stuff like that. But what are some of the things you take into account when you're trying to cap, when you're out here capping?
So like. Yeah, so, I'm looking at numbers throughout the week because I'm doing it for other things, you know? Like, I'm not studying it for betting purposes. I'm just, like, reviewing stats for work-related stuff. So a lot of that stuff, like, a team will kind of jump out to me like, oh, that's a surprising number that I wouldn't have really expected. They'll kind of file it away in the back of my head. So I'm never, like, researching a bet stats-wise for the most part, but I will have sort of background information that will stick with me that, like, will jump out later. So, you know, again, for example, I think the lines on LSU games going forward are probably going to be way too favorable for LSU versus what I think reality is for LSU.
Yeah.
Like, I've just studied enough LSU numbers that I know that. I didn't study it for betting purposes, but I know it. So what I usually do is I'll just run through all of the numbers and say, like, kind of compare what the actual spread is versus what I would have predicted the spread to be. And when there's a big difference of, you know, a couple of points, I'll mark that off as a game I might be interested in. And then, like you, I mean, you have to think about what is the psychology of a team, what is the mindset of a team going into this game. Is this a trap game scenario? Is this, you know, is there a guy dinged up that is important? You know, is there a revenge situation coming out of it? So all of those things kind of come into play. And then you start looking at kind of, is there a matchup that's going to be blatantly exploited there? You know, is there a guy on this team? Like Arizona State, I bet the first couple of weeks because I looked at N'Keal Harry and said, I don't know how good the rest of Arizona State is, but I think he's good enough to keep them in games. I think it was just a matchup nightmare for other teams. So I liked Arizona State. So some of it's just sort of educated guesses. Some of it's kind of having a little bit of background knowledge. But I do surprisingly little, like, actual hard research into it because I think, like you said, it's just at some point it becomes too much information and you start outthinking yourself.
Yeah, sometimes I would text my – we have a group chat. It's four of us, some high school buddies. The group chat kind of inside jokely name. Everybody else is going to think it's dumb. It probably is. It's called the Wise Guys. And especially when I was at ESPN and we had access to these crazy numbers, I would be throwing out like kicker stats and all these numbers and they would just come back to me like, you're way too deep. Like this stuff, like it's cool, but you're going to end up just biting yourself, screwing yourself over because you're just too deep into the numbers. And I found myself doing that too much where I was like, all right, let me look at the numbers, but then let me go with what I think too. And I've had a little bit more success, enough to where I've generally been able to break even at least. But everybody kind of has their own formula.
Like this past weekend, I got a buddy who does a lot of betting, and he's a Wisconsin fan, and he completely talked me out of betting BYU. He's like, Wisconsin's really good. They're due for a blowout game. This is going to happen. And I was all set to bet BYU, and then I didn't because of that conversation. And I should have just trusted myself because I had done the research. I had watched enough of both teams. I felt like BYU was not going to get blown out. And then, of course, they win outright. So, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of, like, you got to know where to shut off the borders and say, all right, no more information. I'm comfortable with this.
Yeah, and actually, I kind of got myself, too. I sort of like BYU in that spot. But then, because I took BYU against Arizona. I actually even took them as part of a money line parlay with them to win outright. I didn't hit the parlay, obviously, because parlays never hit. But and then once I saw how bad Arizona was, I kind of doubted myself on how good I thought BYU was. And same thing, ended up not taking it. Still had an okay day. I got saved by Purdue and Texas toward the end. The Ohio State one hurt because I really thought they were going to really come out strong against TCU. Should have known against Gary Patterson, but Dave, this has been a lot of fun. Unfortunately, this 45 minutes or whatever is going to get cut down to about 6 or 7, so no one's going to really know what was said on this podcast except for us. That'll be our little secret, no Bob Ross style.
it will be the best 7 minutes on the internet that is not currently starring someone who has a GoFundMe page to get Willie Taggart fired.
If anybody makes it to the 7 minute mark of those videos, God bless them because they were. All right, that's definitely getting it edited out. But all right, Dave, we really appreciate you coming on. Yeah, you're a good friend. You were an okay colleague, but you were always a really good friend. So we'll look forward to having you back on.
Bad.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking forward to having you on and do some more picks. We appreciate it.
Cool, man.
Cool. That is it for the reincarnation of Moral Victories. We had a lot of fun, or I had a lot of fun. Dougie's not here. A little hurtful that he didn't come back from the West Coast, cut his vacation short to restart the podcast. But I had a good time talking with Dave. We did some picks. Hopefully you guys at least get a few winners out of those if you do opt to follow along. Again, no promises there for sure. But we will be back next week. We're going to try some new things for what we for kind of going forward here. So definitely subscribe. Leave a comment, 5-star review. It doesn't have to be a positive comment. We're not going to read them, but the five star thing, that'd be nice. So 5-star, subscribe, download, tell a friend, and then we also want to start some reader comments. We're going to try to set up a voicemail if at all possible, but there's going to be an email set up. We'll have details on that on the next show. But that's it for this episode of Moral Victories.